You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above-and-beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20, code pod20, for 20% off your first product.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling. Today, we are talking about Season 2, Episode 12, Lawn Signs. And of course, as always, I am joined by someone who cannot get through an episode of MasterChef Junior without crying. Stuart, how are you?
I'm doing good. I did confirm that earlier when we did a group watch on the Discord.
I had already had it written down as my intro.
It's the kids are just so earnest. They're like, I'm just trying to make a little souffle and it's not working. And they start crying. And then Gordon Ramsay, of all people, is nice to them. It's like, how can your heart not melt? When meanwhile, he's calling like adults donkeys and all sorts for getting stuff wrong.
Yeah, sandwiches. The thing is because children, stay with me, are like dogs. Like, they're innocent. Like, you know what I mean? So you can't be
I get what you're saying, but I probably wouldn't recommend going around calling kids dogs.
They have been tainted by the cruel, cruel world that we live in.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying as well, but kids are also far worse behaved than dogs. Dogs are so much more manageable than kids.
Dogs are just more pure than children. Kids are mean sometimes.
Yeah, kids are savage. They have no filter. You ask them an opinion, they'll give you it.
This is true.
Dogs, meanwhile, will just be like, are you the food provider? Mm-hmm. I will give you love if you are the food provider.
Straight up, one of our nieces said to my husband, to Will, where's Aunt Jess? I want her to visit. You don't have to, but she should come visit.
Do you bribe them, savage, though, with love? Like, do you bribe them presents?
We did bring them presents last time we saw them, but I wouldn't say we bribe them. We live so far away that, we don't see them routinely enough to, bribe them. But mm-hmm. I think it's because we're the only aunt and uncle that are yet to have kids.
I think that works.
Is that a thing? Okay, either way.
Don't tell yourself, Jess. Yeah.
We don't have kids, and I think all their other aunts and uncles do. So when we see them, our sole focus is on them. So we're fine.
You're not bringing competition. Yeah.
No, exactly. Anyway, mm-hmm. let's talk about lawn signs, Stuart. Campaign seems to have come to an end this episode with Moira being the victor.
I didn't see it happening this way. I thought we would. I feel denied. Why are we not getting an election?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm conditioned. I've been watching The West Wing. I need an election. Maybe it can be resolved off camera, but I need some allusion to it. This is a backhand deal. This is dirty politics. This is everything that Jocelyn doesn't want.
Yeah, very dirty politics. All right, let's do a quick recap, and then we will properly dive into this episode. We have a campaign sign thief in Schitt's Creek, or do we? Moira makes a big stink about the very few campaign signs that she has going missing, very obviously blaming Jocelyn and Roland for their disappearance. Stevie, in the only scene Stevie is in this episode, finds Moira's signs poking through Moira's garbage bag, meaning she's the one who stole her own signs to cause a stir because of her minimal resources. I know, shocking. Jocelyn feels so guilty about the missing signs and her abundance of signs that she has her students make Moira some new ones. In fact, Jocelyn feels so overwhelmed with the campaign. She said the word effing, Stuart, the word effing.
Can you fucking believe it?
She drops out of the campaign, making Moira the new town councilor for Schitt's Creek. All hail Moira Rose. Meanwhile, thanks to David's spending and some personal financial problems, Wendy is closing the Blouse Barn. Turns out an Australian company wants the name Blouse Barn, and they are willing to pay $10,000 for it. Through some incredible negotiating and a strong fashion pony from Alexis, the Roses squeeze the lawyer for more money. Wendy is so appreciative that she gives David $40,000. And tells him to do something interesting with it, as he always does. While the Roses want to take a lavish vacation, David wisely says they should save the money and just treat themselves to a manicure, with the exception of Johnny. He's not invited. And that's our episode.
Completely understandable. Johnny, stay at home.
You don't appreciate it like the rest of us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was a good episode. I'd seen a couple of people may have not been so hot on it. And I was like, I don't know. I kind of went into this thinking penultimate. We're going to like get towards the end of things. I thought we would see the builds up towards what I assumed that would happen, which was we have the election happen and the result come in the finale. And then that'd be kind of like how we close off this season. So to have it end the way it did, fell a little flat. But in terms of the actual episode itself, I liked the whole negotiation stuff. I thought that was actually really good. It was nice to see the Roses get a win. Well, I say the Roses, David get a win.
Yeah.
And yeah, I kind of came out of this uplifted. I mean, did you feel the same?
Yeah, I really like this episode. I've said this before, I'm not the biggest fan of the campaign as a season-long story arc. It's just not my favorite. I don't know if I could quite put my finger on why. I guess it just feels like you said, it kind of goes out with a little bit of a fizzle where Jocelyn just backs out and Moira wins. I feel like it's kind of like a wah-wah ending to it. And I don't know, maybe I wanted them to go like a little bit further like than they did in terms of like dirty politics. So that side of the episode it's fine. It's not great. It's not bad. But I absolutely adore the negotiation storyline. I think this is it. First of all, it's a win for David. It shows off that he is more than just, you know, a fashion icon. He has some smarts. He's able to figure out, based on research that he does, based on how the lawyer is dressed, that there's more money here than they're letting on. And yeah. I love that he figures that out. I love Alexis's part in all of this. I love that Wendy has grown to appreciate David and is really like, she doesn't have to give him anywhere near the amount of money. She doesn't have to give him any money. And she certainly doesn't have to give him $40,000. And I love that she does that. Like, it's really kind of her to do. And I think it's like a very, where we say the campaign kind of ends with a little bit of a dull thud, it feels like David working at the Blouse Barn ends with a fireworks show. Like, it's really, really, it's a fun ending to this storyline.
Yeah, couldn't agree more on that kind of whole assessment of it. And I think as well, the thing that I kind of am not too down on the whole election thing for is because it doesn't totally assassinate Jocelyn's character. Like, she's still the Jocelyn that we loved before this all happened. And it is this kind of, like, you can tell that it's been Roland's influence. It's been a kind of almost like a snowball of circumstance that has taken her along this journey, and she's realized that she's uncomfortable with it. And she is just a sweetheart, like, underneath everything. Yeah, she can get a little catty when it, like, calls for
She called a driver an effing moron, Stuart.
But she's losing herself. She would never do that.
She said, I did say effing, not the actual F word, but still, it's not me. I'm not sleeping, and I can't get through MasterChef Junior without crying.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah, that is a really, like, good part of the campaign, is that Jocelyn is still Jocelyn, and Roland is still Roland. You know what I mean? He used his mayoral you know, kind of, what is it, reputation, influence, to get more signs out there. Like, they had a lot of signs.
Yeah, it's good that we don't see that in real life politics of people in power calling up and trying to rig elections, right?
Truly. It's right. Like, too soon? I feel like, I cover Buffy and Felicity over on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, and there's a campaign on Felicity as well. And I'm just like, it's hitting a little too close to home right now, Stuart. Like, we're in a pivotal place in American politics right now. It's a pivotal election year, and it's a little scary. And so I don't need to, like, have my outlet of watching fun, great TV also include so many campaigns. It's too much.
It's almost like politics. It's just really pervasive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get wrapped up in it all. And also, as a third party to American politics, it certainly affects me. I mean, like, I think the US election affects everyone. So I feel that kind of sentiment, but also I'm a little bit taken away from it. So it is,
yeah, you're watching from afar.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it affects me, but, like, it's still quite amusing. Yeah. To an extent. Yeah. But yeah, the politicking side of it is, I think it has redeemable features. But yeah, the absolute thing that brings this episode through, that that elevates it, is this whole negotiation. And I was grinning from ear to ear the entire time, because it involved Wendy and her kind of strange side backstory thing that's going on, and kind of that lore. And also, yeah, like you said, it just builds on David as growing as a character in terms of, like, his worth almost to the Roses, in that he is one of their best assets. Like, he's really smart in specific fields of knowledge. And mm-hmm. I don't think that is really valued enough, because it is fashion or, like, art or whatever like that. It's, like, it's still valuable to some people and can be, if it's quite vapid, yeah, okay, it's not going to be valued that much. But in certain applications, it absolutely is valuable. As we've seen, $40,000 worth.
Yeah, and that's just a portion, right? So, like, let's make some guesses. What do we think that Wendy actually was able to squeeze out of the Australian Blouse Barn if she's giving David $40,000 of that share?
Because, well, this is the thing. Like, she was offered 10.
Yeah.
And she was just going to take the lot. Like, David was getting sacked and wasn't getting anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to eclipse that. And also eclipse it by at least 40. So maybe she got six figures out of it.
I was thinking, like, a minimum of 100K if she's giving David 40K, which is kind of more than he should get. Because let's face it, Stuart, obviously we know that Wendy has had other financial issues. Like, there's a reason she was looking for a brand redesigner anyway, is because the Blouse Barn wasn't exactly making buku bucks. But at the same time, David didn't exactly help, right? We get another mention of the leather ponchos and how she's so surprised any of them have sold. It seems like David just kind of made the death spiral happen a little quicker, kind of like pushed it a little bit to move it forward a little bit quicker. And so, yeah, I think Wendy is just appreciative that she gets anything, let alone that much extra money that she wasn't expecting, all because David, I mean, we saw him, he had a laptop out, he's doing research on the Australian version of the Blouse Barn, he's assessing this lawyer Lisa and realizing, like, oh, she's wearing really nice clothes, and, like, she's gonna be in big trouble if she doesn't settle this for us. So he does, like, an absolutely incredible job. And on top of that, the fact that he is the one of all the family members, you'd think this would be more of a Johnny thing, that says, maybe we should save this money. Like, maybe we shouldn't go on some lavish vacation, because, I don't know, you know, Alexis is kind of the only one with a paying job at the moment. I don't know. Do town councilors make money? I suppose they probably do.
Some. I get the impression that unless it's like a full-time gig, like Roland being mayor, maybe it's like a side hustle thing.
Yeah, especially because Ronnie, Bob, all of them have other means of income. So it'd be surprising if that it made that much money, but they certainly could use some money to put in the savings bank until at least half of them have full-time means of employment. But I also really love Alexis this episode, where she is like, David, you don't know. I have been interrogated and I am a perfect asset to you. I love, we bring back Angelica Bloomfield of Rose Bloomfield and Glickman. Kills me every single time. And her power pony, I love it so, so, so much.
It's like you see her transform into another person, except no, you don't. She is still just Alexis with a power pony, but it does give her the confidence that she needs to drive through whatever it is that she's pushing. Someone was saying that we need to gather all of the Alexis backstories at some point and talk about them because they are getting quite insane now.
That's a bonus podcast of tier ranking Alexis's wild stories.
Yeah. Although I don't know how you can tier rank them when they're all S tier, because I don't think we've had a bad one yet. Every single one has me cracking up. Like this one, like just the fact that it was like the South Korean police on New Year's, and then she had to negotiate for a passport so that she'd get out of the country in time. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, where's the common San Diego BS going on here?
If Prince Harry trusted me with his life, I think you can too. It's like, Prince Harry? Wait, what?
Wait, so Alexis is to blame?
Yeah. It's so, so funny. Were you picked up by the South Korean police on New Year's? I love her slamming down her hands. Did you or did you not have a subscription to Cosmo Girl when you were 16 years old, David? And then she tells him to breathe out when he lies because it calms you down. Just again, like how she has all these little points of knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's so it's such a funny character trait that I don't know that I've really seen done on television very much, that we are learning so much about a character's history by these one-off lines that sound insane, like out of context. But yeah, I love her in the meeting as well. The objection sustained. It's just like she just says
the
whatever she's
misuse
she
of legalese is brilliant. I don't think it'll ever not be funny to me. Like when David goes to stand up at the end and is like, we have a meeting to get to, and then Wendy's like, nah, we're at our own store, and he's like, I will await your reply. They're just playing dress up. Like, they're just kids messing around in an adult
literally,
world.
Literally, right?
But they're allowed to because the stakes are so low. Yeah, because they're more intimidating. They're, scarier.
That tracks. Very much tracks. Alexis wears more flowy, flowery, floral, sort of bohemian clothes. And Moira is definitely wearing, powerful, intimidating clothing. So that tracks.
Yeah. Did you find the little diamante, lobster brooch to be very intimidating that she was wearing?
I did. Brooches are very intimidating. I would never deign to wear a brooch. I just feel like, one, you need to, be at least midway through your life before you put a brooch on your clothes. And also just what is the right occasion that you're, to wear a brooch to? I don't think I've ever been to an occasion where a brooch would be required.
I feel like jewelry is typically an adornment of a certain feature. So ears, rings for fingers and stuff like that. When you run out of those things to gild, I think that's when you have to lean into brooches, because you're just pinning stuff to yourself. But then how many brooches is too many brooches? You end up with a whole pin situation going on.
A pin
on.
Bib, yeah.
Yeah, bad. Ooh. Bad look.
Also, can we talk about the fact that Wendy went with Blouse Barn and she said, I was going to go with Blouse House, but...
So much better.
It's so much... It rhimes!
So much better. Imagine I got this at the Blouse House. I'd be like, where is that? I want to go.
Yes. Okay. Here's my ranking of I feel like alliteration is great. I love alliteration, but rhyming supersedes alliteration. If you can have both, 10 out of 10, but I feel like rhyming goes, wait, you can't have both because then it would be the same word. Either way, alliteration is below rhyming, I think, in naming conventions.
blouse. is that the weird loophole? So where rhyming is better, but if it both rhymes and alliterates, then it's actually both worse than both rhyming and alliteration.
Yes, it's a double negative and it cancels out.
cancels out each other. Okay. Puns, though. Puns go above all. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Because I recently, over the weekend, I took a trip to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and there was a place there, and it was a grilled cheese sandwich lunch eatery restaurant named Cheese Louise. Now,
no.
As soon as I saw the sign, I was like, I must eat there. I must. We have to give them credit for their brilliant marketing. Everything inside was like themed. Everything was like cheesy themed. Even the names of the things were like kind of cheesy themed. It was incredible. Cheese Louise. What more can you want? So that's top, then rhyming, then alliteration. I think
completely. There used to be a radio show that I used to listen to when I was working in retail when I was 16 years old, and on the radio show they had a section that was called Pun Street, and what it was, this was a theoretical high street, or what you all would call like a main street, where all the shops in this theoretical street are made up of shops with puns for names that people have found out in the wild, so people would like send them in to the radio show. And some of my favorites were two. One was a fireplace shop that was in Wimbledon that was called Great Expectations, which to this day I appreciate so much because it just works so well. It's kind of classy, but also a pun. And the best one ever was Indiana Bones and the Temple of Groom, and it was a dog groomers.
That's brilliant. It's brilliant. No notes.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Just
Punny names are always the way to go. Always the way to go. But Blouse House is definitely superior to Blouse Barn, especially because a barn, like, I feel like nothing says like low budget like a barn, you know? Like, I don't want to look like I'm dressed for a barn.
I mean, it sold, like, the moment they said Blouse Barn, I knew exactly the kind of place it was. And I knew exactly why Jocelyn liked it, because it was tacky.
Because it's tacky.
You could buy in bulk.
They give a grieving discount or whatever, a funereal discount. Yeah,
but the Blouse House might have muddled that a little bit, but I don't think that that would have cared as much because I'd have been like, it's a fantastic name.
Speaking of Jocelyn, let's talk a little bit more about the end of the campaign here. What did you make of Moira stealing her own campaign signs and expecting Johnny to be in on the con with her?
Firstly, Moira's play here is kind of genius. Like, she's a real political mind because she realizes she's absolutely outgunned when it comes to the financials. What can she do to flip this around? She goes on the attack and tries to get sympathy. Politics, I have to respect it. It's a really good play. As for the morality, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But also, Johnny should have seen this coming, right? Like, how did Johnny not know? Set of blinkers on sometimes with Moira West. Sometimes when he like really sees her, he sees her and understands her and gets her. But then there are times when I'm like, do you even know this woman?
I'm wondering if I feel like it's obvious with, you know, with hindsight, because she comes into the diner and is like, woe is me, Johnny, my signs are gone. She doesn't say it when they're in the motel alone, the two of them, you know what I mean? She's making a very big scene. All she had to do was tell him beforehand, like, oh, this is the plan. This is what I'm going to do. I think the problem comes in when you involve Roland, because while I don't think Jocelyn would have anything to do with stealing anyone's sign, she's too pure of heart. Mm-hmm. I do think Roland, as we know, based on what Jocelyn says, he's willing to dirty politic. And so I think that's the problem. I think that Johnny is immediately ready to blame Roland. I think he, especially when he sees Roland pounding three signs per lawn, you know, like with his hundreds of signs, I think it's very easy for him to believe that Roland is responsible. But you're right. He should know better. He should, especially the biggest faux pas on Johnny's part is when Stevie returns the signs. why would he ever think Stevie is involved? As if Stevie gives a crap about local elections enough to do this. That's where I think his biggest mistake is blaming Stevie.
Yeah, completely. It's an absolute dick move. And like you said, like, as if Stevie cares about local politics, as if Stevie cares about many things enough to do that. Like, it just so doesn't make sense. In a way, there's a kind of, I guess, a slight romance in the sense that, like, he's so quick to anger to defend Moira because he loves her so dearly. But then I just think, surely you'd see the ruse going on here. You'd see what she's kind of getting at.
Yeah.
And then the moment you see the signs, you'd put that together. But still, you're just wanting to blame Roland, blame Stevie, blame anyone but her. Yeah, I'm not sure if it just didn't make sense to me. I didn't really gel with this too much.
I think it's fair. I think he should know Moira better at this point, given how close they are, given this isn't out of the realm of possibility something. In fact, it's exactly in line with who Moira is. So it's a little surprising he didn't catch on until she had to say to him, I did it, and she's proud of it. You know, she says she has limited resources, so she has to cause a stir around town, and she can't take Jocelyn's signs. That would be stealing, and she's running a clean campaign. I do love when she compares this to an episode of Sunrise Bay, the soap opera she's on, where she's stolen her own bebé. It's so funny. She says she's building mystery and voters will draw their own conclusions. And she gets away with it too, Stuart, because when she sees Jocelyn at like a Jazzagals concert, it sounds like Moira is about to confess to hiding her own signs. But before she's able to, Jocelyn presents her with signs that her classroom made for her, which is, it's so sweet. And they're very colorful and obviously not as like posh as Moira's black and white signs. And Jocelyn admits that, no, it was Roland who used his mayoral power to get people to put more signs on their lawns. And she feels extremely guilty about this.
She's such a sweetheart. And I've always been kind of like hot on Jocelyn because I think that she is just a lovely character that's kind of true to herself. And this whole election has thrown that into question because we've seen her, I wouldn't say fully nasty side, but we've seen a side to Jocelyn that we didn't get before, which has been good in fleshing her out, but then also has been the best because it's not been the most flattering. So to see her crumble, but to not only crumble, admit the whole thing with Roland using his mayoral powers and stuff, but to do it in a way where she gets her kids to make her signs was so sweet.
It's
like,
very
it was
sweet.
Just the most adorable thing ever. And it was like such a lovely gesture. And for someone to feel that, despite the fact that Moira quite clearly alluded with her around that it was perhaps her doing it, to still go away and help her just speaks to like how Jocelyn can be just very lovely. But the mayoral power, like abuse of power, Roland, that's very naughty.
Not very good. And I love that when, you know, Moira gets maybe like 5 minutes of excitement knowing that she's won the election before she has to think about the fact that for 4 years she's going to have to work with Roland every single day. And I really enjoyed this revelation coming to her as the Jazzagals are singing It's Raining Men. It's perfect.
The absurdity of it is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I love a Jazzagals scene. It's really, they're really fun.
Oh yeah. I mean, pipes on them. Like Jazzagals can sing when you actually listen to it. But I love the comeuppance of the whole thing. Like Moira does a kind of a bad thing, gets what she wants out of it, and then has to deal with the consequences, which is more time with Roland, which is only going to lead to hilarity. I actually can't wait to see more Moira and Roland together because I think, the actor's name is absolutely going.
Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott and Catherine O'Hara together, I think, are just really good. Like, they've got such great comedic chemistry. Like, from the slap when we first kind of saw him, it was like, I need more of this. And every time we've had a peppering of it, I've been really excited. So to see them possibly get more scenes together is really exciting. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait for that. But yeah, it's great to see Moira actually suffer for what she's done. Which is
yes.
Good.
Yeah, you know that they're suffering in her future. Exactly. So as a quick aside before we jump into the feedback, I saw Eugene Levy. He appeared on a television show I won't name just in case anybody isn't spoiled on his appearance on it. And Will brought up like, oh, do you want to guess how old Eugene Levy is? Because I mean, I really had no idea. And don't you dare Google, Stuart. I'm watching
so
your eyeballs.
Tempted. I'm
don't
so
do
tempted.
Do you want to make any guesses as to how old the actor Eugene Levy is? Because I was very surprised when I found out his age.
Okay. I'm going to try and math this out a little bit.
Math it out.
So, sorry, maths it out. Dan Levy,
yeah,
his son, plays someone in their early 30s in Schitt's Creek that aired in 2019.
Okay.
So that would put Dan Levy about kind of early 40s at this point. So maybe, just rule of thumb, add on 20, maybe it's like and a half.
Okay.
So that would put him at 65, 70-ish.
Okay.
Have I totally nailed it?
He is 77 years old.
No way.
He looks incredible. Yeah.
That's outrageous.
That's what I said. I was like, this man, like, he's in great shape. I feel like it's, I think the secret sauce is his eyebrows. I really do.
I was gonna say the same thing.
I think it's his eyebrows. They bring youth to him.
Do you think what his body has done is through his youth, he's grown these resplendent eyebrows, and all of that youth has just settled within them. And now it's like, I'm going to draw from that power in older age. Maybe that's going to keep me going. Because, I mean, dude looks fantastic for 77.
77.
Looks better than I do. And I'm in, I'm not going to say how old I am, but yeah.
I'm not even going to say the decade, not even going to say it. But along those same lines, any guesses on how old Catherine O'Hara is?
Okay. Well, they came up on the comedy scene around the same time. I mean, I wouldn't want to say the same, but I'm going to guess around the same.
How old is she? 65 to 7, or are you going to say 77?
Yeah, 65, 70.
She's exactly 70 years old.
What?
Yeah. I mean, she looks incredible, too. Like,
And the
thing I was saying, and this is no, like, people should do whatever they want with their own bodies, right? Like, that is your choice to make those decisions. Whatever makes you happy, do it. But it's kind of incredible that they both appear to have aged in the way that it would be normal that humans do. You know, you occasionally get a wrinkle or two, your hair grays, etc. But they don't look fake old. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, they still have expressive faces and a couple of lines on their face. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they've aged so gracefully. It was just astounding, and I had to bring it up on the podcast because I was like, what? How is he 77?
That's wild. Yeah. But yeah, aging gracefully is something to be admired. I think in Hollywood especially, like, you see so much of people in shows that feel like the pressures of everything to, like, change themselves to do everything. And then in later life, you get filler face. They can't move it. It's awful.
It's
and
sad.
For, like, in some situations, it can be kind of amusing, like Joan Rivers when she, like, would make jokes at herself about the whole situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's lovely to see people just embrace themselves and just say, I am getting old and I'm going to look like I'm getting old. But of course, when they embrace it, like these two clearly have, and have also, well, I mean, I think it's a testament to embracing it because they look fantastic. So it looks normal.
I think it's because they've done so much comedy work as well. Because laugh lines, even if you get laugh lines, it's like, but you just look like you've had a happy life. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Talking of seeing people in other things, Catherine O'Hara, obviously, I'm very excited because she is going to be in the next season of The Last of Us. And I'm a huge Last of Us fan.
Yes.
But she was doing some promo for the new Beetlejuice film at the moment. And there was an interview where apparently she spent a whole day filming a scene with Pedro Pascal and then randomly just called him Charles for some reason. And apparently he just sends her messages signing off from Charles with, like, love Charles and stuff. And it just makes me laugh that just weird tidbit. She mentioned it and I was just cackling listening.
I love that so much. Yeah, I'm really excited to see her in it. It's really nice to see, because again, I don't want to mention what Eugene Levy is in just because I feel like it's an exciting reveal if you haven't watched the thing. But like he's also like still getting really great work, like very notable shows. It just makes me so happy to see them continuing on and like getting, not that they weren't incredible before they were on Schitt's Creek. I'm not trying to say that, but like it's just like it makes me so happy that they're still getting work, yeah, and that they're still around, you know?
Yeah, because they were always like they were always on the fringes of like I think they were household names, like what with their appearances and things like American Pie and Home Alone and like Beetlejuice and things like that. But they weren't ever like leading characters in anything other than kind of like niche films that like Best in Show and stuff like that they've done themselves. So it's lovely to see them get so many opportunities off the back of this, and I think choose really kind of like wisely, like. Eugene Levy's got that travel show with Apple, which is, I think, one of the best gigs when you reach a certain age in TV and like kind of film. You go, yeah, I'll do a travel show. A company's going to pay me to travel the world and see the best sites, and it's going to be documented by some really talented crew, and I'm going to have the memories of a lifetime that I could get to watch back on. Like, it's just, oh, if there's a reason to get famous, it's that.
Definitely. Yes. Okay. Let's talk feedback here, because we did get some feedback. First, let's start with last week's podcast, because I can't tell you how many times I've seen this show. And yet I didn't know that. I didn't notice this thing. You didn't notice this thing. It took two comments on YouTube from Susan Choosing 4404 and Liz Whipper 6604. Oh, look at that. You guys put like a four at the end. Both of them said, you do realize that the apartment where that last episode David and Alexis were looking at is where Bob's brother Carl hung himself from the ceiling fan, right? And I said, nope, didn't realize that. Unbelievable. And Liz caught it on her first watch. And I'm just like, how did you, first of all, how'd you catch that? Second of all, I mean, again, multiple times I've seen these episodes, many, many times, never would have known, Stuart, never.
I think my excuse will be that I'm watching it in such a kind of like week to week basis. Like I'm getting a real big break from it and stuff. So maybe on a binge, I could totally see how you'd catch this, because it is just that detail that comes from like Carl's funeral, and which is, was it this season? It was early this season. I can't even remember. Or was it late last
Carl's
season?
Carl's funeral?
Yeah.
Carl's funeral was season one.
Jeez, so that's like retaining information over two seasons, and it's really throwaway information as well.
Yeah, we covered Carl's funeral back in May, so you would have had to.
That's my excuse.
May.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I don't have an excuse besides I'm dumb and I just didn't notice. So that's a really
great spot, and I love that they have thrown in that kind of like little detail for those people that are watching. Yeah. Like we've been talking about how kind of. The writing is at times unnecessary in kind of its quality, because it really, a sitcom isn't usually afforded this kind of quality of writing. But to like, for a writer to have the thought and just like, yeah, we'll add in that detail and that will be the reason why and stuff. It just fleshes out the world so much better. And it's really deeply dark, but hilarious at the same time.
Exactly. We also heard from Jared, who says, this is not one of my favorites. I'm happy that we're finally getting a conclusion to the campaign arc and David's growth. But other than a few good lawyer jokes, I don't find that this is that funny. And as for the plot, ... because Jared had some spoilery thoughts that you cannot hear and or see, Stuart. So, sorry.
Soon spoilers or late game
soon,
spoilers?
Very soon. Okay. Spoilers. Yeah.
I think we'll approach them soon. I can see Jared's point of view here. I see that for some people, I can see this why this wouldn't be one of their kind of favorites. For me, the whole lawyering stuff kind of landed, possibly due to the fact that I am kind of removed from that sector of work. So it is a novelty, and maybe it's not quite as funny if you kind of understand it and stuff, but yeah, I got a kick out of it.
Yeah. Objection sustained. Trish says, poor Johnny not getting a manicure at the end. They should have treated him too. He wouldn't have appreciated it, Trish. He wouldn't have.
I don't think he deserved it, this episode.
He wanted David to give up. He wanted, he's like, oh, that name is too stupid. Get the $10,000 and get out of there.
Yeah, what's he know?
Trish asks, what does Stuart think will happen to this money? Are they going to be able to save it? What happens to the 40K, Stuart?
I think they will. I'd say that. I think that they will hopefully spend it wisely. Hopefully they'll... Maybe some advice from Johnny will come in a good form, which is that it's one thing to save it and to have it in a bank that's not going to kind of develop money. The best thing to do is to make it make more money. So invest it in something, maybe. Something that's going to help them get back on the feet. I don't want them to invest it in anything like property or anything like that, because I want them still to live in the motel because it's funny.
Of course, yeah.
But maybe something work-wise, maybe like a business. Bob's Bagels. Maybe they could make Bob's Bagels a thing.
Bob's Bagels.
If anything, if it's not Bob's Bagels, I'd be furious. I'm saying, okay. I'm changing it now.
<That's what laughs> anything except Bob's Bagels is simply unacceptable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I
really want Bob's Bagels.
Well, let's get into some ratings here. Stuart, who was simply the best for you this episode? I feel like it's a toss-up between two characters, and it's really hard to choose between them.
Who are you thinking? Like, for the two?
Yeah, so the two, I think it's between David and Jocelyn. I feel like, you know, David securing 40 grand and, like, negotiating such a good deal is incredible. Going with his gut, not listening to his dad, sort of, like, carving his own path. All of those things are really incredible. And Jocelyn, I think, does a really, like, kind thing. And, you know, has her students make signs for Moira, backs out of the race. I love the fact that she says effing moron. I think that's hilarious. So I think it's a tight race between the two of them.
Exactly my problem. And I'm glad that you're saying the same, because I'm hoping we might be able to do some dirty politicking of our own here, Jess.
Ooh.
Because I feel like a certain character needs to pick me up. Mm-hmm. I feel like a certain character needs to certainly not be as low as they are when it comes to our season two review, because I will be very devastated if they do end up with this. But I think I've got to honor what I've been doing a lot, which is not only talking about who kind of does really nice things in the moment and stuff like that. I think we've got to talk about growth. And Jocelyn returning to base level, for me, isn't necessarily growth. I think David, though, is exhibiting what he could be exhibiting, which is learning from his family's mistakes, with their extravagance, with their kind of mismanagement of wealth. And also, I think, yes, okay, he did the whole thing with the lawyer for his own benefit because he kind of wanted to keep his job. But I don't think he did it through the hopes of getting money out of it, which I thought was a very good thing. And he was trying to get Wendy the best deal. So I'm saying David.
You're right. It is a very noble thing that he does, because it's not even about him getting the money. It's more about saving Wendy and saving the business. And, like, as an added benefit, possibly, like, he thinks they're going to keep the store and just rebrand it. That's what he thinks is going to happen at the end. So obviously there's a little bit of self-interest there where he would keep a job. But I agree with you. I think it's a very noble thing that David does. I am going to give my point to Jocelyn, because if I'm going to take away a point from her earlier in the season for dirty politicking, as I still think and I still maintain she possibly did, I'm going to give her a point for doing something so kind and generous. Like, she didn't need to have her students make those signs, you know, like, she could have just said, sorry, Moira, like, and taken away some of her own signs to kind of even things out. She went above and beyond. And I really love that about Jocelyn. I think that is one of her best character traits, is just how kind she is. And so I'm going to reward her. I'm going to give her a point. I think David, I think you covered the David stuff very well. And I totally agree with you. David 100% deserves to be simply the best. But I'll give Jocelyn a point as well. I think she's earned it.
Okay. See, I thought when I was saying about the whole dirty politics of our own, I thought we might be able to negotiate like a half point for Jocelyn or something. But if you give her the full point, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Disgruntled Pelican, I think, is a little bit tougher. I don't think it's that tough. I think it's a little tougher. I think there's not like, a, I mean, Johnny gives some terrible advice, but I don't think I want to condemn him for the advice he gives to David. I feel like he doesn't necessarily know the entire story. I feel like he's like 10 grand is great. Like, I think you should settle for 10 grand. I think the person who truly does some heinous stuff this episode is Moira. Like, I like stealing your own signs is really bad, even in the interest of causing a ruckus and stirring up shit. I just think it's not great. And I think maybe she doesn't get this disgruntled pelican point if she confesses to Jocelyn, but she doesn't. She just lets Jocelyn feel all that guilt and does nothing with it. And so I have to do this because truly, if there was anyone else to give it to, I would. I don't think, I guess Roland does some bad stuff too, but I feel like Moira does something worse. Like, she makes Jocelyn feel bad. And I feel like that's worse than what Roland does. So I'm going to give my disgruntled pelican point to Moira.
That's really interesting. Because when you said it was like between two, Moira's name didn't even come up for me when I thought about
really?
This. But hearing you say that, it should have. But I think it should have been between three. Maybe an argument for four, which I think would be the highest stakes. Because I would throw in Lisa from the Blouse Barn, Australia.
Sure.
Because lawyers, like bad lawyers. Well, I mean,
just kidding.
Lawyers of a certain kind.
Objection sustained.
Just imagine all the reviews. The one that I was going to throw in that you hadn't mentioned was Roland, and I've been on his back on this before, interfering in the political process. Like, this is not allowable or acceptable. However, I see you typing it in, Jess.
Get it off. Getting ready. Okay, I'll take it away.
Because it's kind of Johnny. Because Johnny blames Stevie.
Yeah, it's bad.
Terrible advice. Like, really bad advice. So much so that I kind of think that Johnny is not a great businessman in any way, shape, or form. I mean, we've seen that by the fact that he wasn't even looking at their kind of financial situation at all in terms of their like taxes and stuff like that, and trusted the wrong people. But he made some business decisions based on how they looked on a golf shirt. Like,
the fact that he went after Rosie's video, it's not even the same name. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. There is a Rosie out there and she's pissed.
Exactly. Poor Rosie. And then blaming Stevie, and also there he is. David comes to him, asks for advice, and explains the whole situation. And Johnny is like, "Oh, you lost your job and stuff? Okay, well, after you've done that and stuff, we'll do you a resume to get you another job." He's trying to get David a third job in this town while he has had how many jobs? Zero.
Where's Bob's bagels, Johnny? We're waiting.
Exactly. Deliver the bagels and I will be nicer to you, Johnny.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, you know what? I totally agree with you. You've made some great points. Johnny has deserved this disgruntled pelican point.
Yeah. We're often too harsh on him, but I feel like this is really
deserved.
This time
it's deserved. Yeah. Okay. We do have a wig to discuss this episode. A brand new wig from Moira. It is brown. It is curly. It is like very full of life, I would say, Stuart. And let me just say, Moira is also wearing what appear to be two different brooches. And also in the same
image. She's an absolute multiple brooch wearer.
Yeah, she is.
This wig's a strange one. I think this is a completely new one that we haven't seen before. It's very bouncy. Like, it's the kind of wig that I imagine that people that kind of shake their head back and forth would like kind of wear a lot, because it would just bounce around and stuff. I don't know why she wore this. Like, it didn't seem to match anything that they were doing. Like, it wasn't quite jazzy. It wasn't quite politicky. I'm not sure if she just kind of looked and went, two worlds mixed into one wig. This is it.
I didn't recall her wearing so many brunette wigs. I think I prefer the blonde and other versus brunette on her. Brunette just seems so normal. And Moira is anything but. you know.
Well, she's a woman of the people. She's a politician that people can relate to, right? Yeah. She's a woman of the people. She's a brunette, but she also wears two brooches because she is above everyone else.
So. Obviously. Yes, yes. And her campaign signs will only be black and white, as those are the only mm-hmm. colors that she will wear. Unless she's wearing an all gold ensemble. It's fine. I don't think it's one of her better wigs, I would say.
No.
So that's the wig watch, which means we now must tier rank the episode, Stuart. As always, we have Hot Shit, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey For Me, Eo David, and Shit Out of Luck. Stuart, Gut Instinct, Where Does Lawn Signs Belong?
Love That Journey For Me, I think, for me, is where I kind of instinctively want to put it. I think that it's a perfectly good episode, not a great episode. Again, we're working on this kind of like tier ranking that kind of Love That Journey For Me is the base level almost, and anything above is great. Anything below is kind of like below average, but not bad. I kind of want to say Love That Journey For Me. How about you?
I feel similarly. I'm just not sure exactly where I want to put it. I'm just like double checking the candidate. Obviously, I know the one plot line, but I want to see.
This is when and it's tainted it again.
Yes, exactly. So this is when it's like Moira and Johnny don't tell each other that they're each thinking of running. Alexis has moved back to the motel, but she like really wants to hang out with people. She doesn't know how to be alone. And then David and Stevie obviously go to the bar in the scene. I think I would maybe put this one above Motel Guest and below Jazzigals, I feel like. Because I really, really enjoy the one storyline, and I'm pretty meh on the other storyline. And there's only two this time.
I think that's perfectly understandable. I think Motel Guests had some kind of like clunky moments in a way, but I thought was still quite funny in times. I think this one had the heart and also had some really good like funny moments with the negotiation. I think this had some plot, and I always appreciate that. And also, I think that'd be a good place to put it. I've got no arguments there.
Let's put it in Love That Journey For Me.
Love That Journey For Me.
Also, I'm really upset because I forgot when you gave David his Simply the Best point, I was going to play this clip.
Yay, David! Yay!
Yay, David! Yay!
Oh no, we're just gonna end up into being like one of those shock radio shows. And
I would make a Parks and Rec reference, but you wouldn't get it. That's fine. Anyway, next week's episode is titled "Happy Anniversary."
Anniversary, another party, maybe another end of season party.
Anniversary is it?
I mean, the assumption would be Johnny and Moira. Could be Roland and Jocelyn.
Okay.
Could be interesting. What else could it be? Could it be like the town's anniversary of its founding, maybe? Has it been a year since they've been there, maybe? Is it that anniversary? Probably. I mean, the timeline's a bit wacky. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm intrigued. But I expect some sort of form of celebration.
Yeah.
And for there to be a nice, sweet moment. And also something's going to go wrong.
Well, we'll be celebrating because we won't be alone. We'll be joined by the amazing Grace Leader making her inaugural debut on Talking Shit. That'll be really exciting. Just to put it into perspective, Stuart, Grace claimed this episode when we were still talking about the podcast being a thing, I think. That is how much she enjoys this episode. So I'm really excited for next week. I've already seen the episode a few times, well, beyond my normal amount of times, because once I finished Lawn Signs for this week, I was like, well, I might as well just finish the season. I'm already here. So it's next week's our finale episode of season two.
Looking forward to it.
And I'm really excited because season three is stellar. I feel like the increase in quality from seasons two to three is more drastic than one to two.
Ooh.
So I'm really excited because I'm looking at the titles and I'm already like super jazzagalled up to cover season three. So
that'll be jazzagalled
up. Jazzagalled up.
Yay, David. Yay.
That's me when I talk about getting ready for season three.
Oh dear.
Yay, David. So yeah, so that'll be next week. We will finish up season three. And then of course, as always, we'll do our season wrap up before diving into season three. But I think that's all we have, Stuart. You can find us at Talkin' Shit everywhere. Make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. You can see our tier ranking. You can see Moira's ridiculous wigs. And yeah, if you want to send us in feedback, podcast@talkinshit is our email address. You can tag us on social media @talkinshit. And I think that's about everything. So until next time, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.